I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, we're going to take a look at faith nights. Does religion belong at the ballpark? And the barbershop guys on the news of the week. But first, the NAACP is wrapping up its convention in Detroit, and the National Urban League is preparing for its annual gathering in St. Louis. Traditional civil rights groups like these have been fighting for equality for generations. But with challenges like the Supreme Court's ruling on school diversity and the fight over immigration, can these organizations still be instruments of change? Or are new tools needed for the fight? Joining us to talk about this are Marc Morial, the president and CEO of the National Urban League, and John Trasvina, president of the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, or MALDEF. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Great to be with you.
Nice to be here, Michelle.
John, let's go to you first. Because of the civil rights organizations I think most people are familiar with, MALDEF is probably one of the youngest. It was founded in 1968. So I'd like to ask you, when you look at the civil rights organizations that came before you, what did they do well that you modeled yourself after? And is there something that you do differently that you think that you do better?
We've learned a lot from over our 40-year history. Based upon the work of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund and others to really be the law firm for the Latino community. And you're right, today that means something different than it did even 20 years ago. We can't just rely on the courts to get our victories. We have to look to Congress. We have to look to city councils. Every day these days there are challenges at the local level and the state level, particularly now that the Congress has failed to enact comprehensive immigration reform. We're facing an onslaught of local and state measures on immigration restrictions that don't belong in the Constitution, but they are there nonetheless. The new challenges that we face require us to do even more to work with people of goodwill across communities, not only among our traditional allies and partners, such as the Urban League and others, but also to work across religions, across various groups, coalitions of business, labor, religious groups, and others, to fight for things that are very important to us.
Okay. Marc, if you could jump into this. And, of course, I think partly because the NAACP and the Urban League are older organizations, a century old in one case, the debate has started about whether these groups are now out of step with the needs of the times. And one indicator seems to be that young people used to be at the forefront of the civil rights movements. They were the ones who were sitting in at the lunch counters and so forth. And now they seem not as interested in these organizations. So what do you say to those who question whether these groups have the right tools for the times?
Well, I think that we must evolve and we must connect with a younger generation and a younger demographic. At the National Urban League, we've sought to do that with an entire initiative dedicated to young people, where we have 9,000 young people between the ages of 20 and 40 in about 50 chapters who are part of a group that we call the Young National Urban League Young Professionals. But what I think out there in the public, there is sort of a need for us to also talk more about what we do. For example, the National Urban League, we are not a law firm. We are not a direct advocacy organization in the sense of the NAACP, but what we are is a direct services organization, and we serve almost a million people directly a year. That means we find jobs for people. We train people for jobs. We serve children in after-school programs. We're very relevant to people we serve across the nation. To a broader constituency, it's important to recognize that civil rights organizations who help produce the more than 70 congresspersons of color, African American, Hispanic, and Latino, civil rights groups that help produce corporate executives who are now climbing the ranks in the private sector, we are not the only leadership groups out there. There are many others that are products of the civil rights movement, and products of affirmative action, and products of the work of the 20th century. And because of that, our roles do evolve. We have to work in conjunction with and in partnership with a whole range of people, perhaps to a greater extent than we did before. And for us at the National Urban League, we also feel we need to define the issues for our work much more tightly around closing economic disparities, addressing poverty, the home ownership gap, the jobs gap, the business formation gap that exists in our community. We've got to close the economic divide. So we have, at the Urban League, reached out to young people. We have sought to redefine and transform the work we're doing. And we have to work very hard to get the message out on those points.
John, one of the challenges of your organization, it seems to me, is that many of the people who feel that their civil rights are being threatened are not necessarily citizens. And does that complicate building a grassroots civil rights movement around their concerns?
Well, I think Mark is right about really getting ready for the future. And we do this focused on youth as well. We have something called the partnership with the Urban League and the Asian Pacific American Legal Center, something called the Los Angeles Multi-Ethnic Collaborative, where we are our respective organizations, both individually in our communities, but also together, are educating parents and educating students, young people, about both their rights and their responsibilities in education. So parents are being guided as to what is expected of them by the schools, by the teachers, by the principals, and also what they can expect in terms of how to advocate for better educational programs, after-school programs, things like that. And when you educate the parents, you're also educating someone who is going to engage in workplace democracy and greater civic engagement. So we do have the obstacles of our parents, who are mainly immigrants. They can't vote on election day. But for the other 364 days of the year, we are engaging them in the governance of their school districts.
One of the Mark Morial, John Trezvina raises an interesting point about in part sort of teaching your constituency how to work within the system. I mean, he's saying that's in part what MALDEF is doing, is sort of teaching Latino parents who may not have grown up here how to work within the system, how to access and approach institutions of authority. One of the big dialogues, of course, in the Black community is that many of the problems that now confront the Black community seem to be rooted in the Black community. How do you adapt your group's strategies to these challenges, issues like crime, the breakdown of the family, the achievement gap?
I think like anything, crime and the achievement gap have their roots in poverty, have their roots in difficult family situations to a great extent. But I think as civil rights organizations, we have to be strong voices against violence and drugs in our community. Because in most cases, with those sorts of issues, we are indeed most likely to be the victims of that sort of thing. So we've got to do and be voices for that. But I really believe that for the National Urban League, and I think that we have to also say to our constituency that we cannot be all things to all people. We cannot be experts in every single social and economic issue that faces our community. So for the National Urban League, we've carved out economic issues and economic programs. We've carved out a range of issues related to youth and education to really be the focus of our work as a part of our agenda. And we will be a voice on those other issues, but this is where this idea of and the need for other voices of elected, non-elected, community leaders, other groups are so crucial, because the wide range of challenges that we face, I think, require that. Here's a point. In the 1960s, the 50s and 60s that we sort of use as a baseline, civil rights groups like the National Urban League and the NAACP and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference were the preeminent leaders, the preeminent spokes platforms and spokespersons for Black America. But there were only four to six Black members of Congress. There were no African American mayors of major American cities. There were few, if any, African American voices in mainstream media. Times have evolved and times have changed. And what I hope we can also do is inspire those other voices, those in the elected field, those who may be in the business community in corporate America, those who are in the media, and to not forget their responsibility to not only climb the ladder but pull others up, to not only be there but to open the doors for others.
Mark, I want to switch gears for just a minute because we're only down to our last couple of minutes. You both talked about the fact that your groups each work in coalitions, and you are often in coalition with each other. But there are some who would consider that kind of an elitist construct. They say that the concerns of these groups are not identical, that, for example, that Latinos don't really have a stake in the civil rights gains made by African Americans, and some African Americans believe that Latinos, particularly illegal immigrants, are posing an economic threat to African Americans. So, Mark, what would you say to those who argue that these coalitions don't really serve the interests of your individual constituencies? And I'll hear from Mark first, and then I'd like to hear from John.
In a coalition, you agree on what you can agree on, and you recognize that there are going to be issues that you have some differences on. And the idea of a coalition is that you don't necessarily walk in lockstep on each and every issue. But there's power in numbers, and to the extent that on key issues, the reauthorization of the Voting Rights Act, issues regarding job training and education, African Americans, Latinos, and others can get together with other organizations and other allies, then we're going to be stronger. We're going to have more impact. But we should never be wedded to the idea that we can only work in a coalition and that they're not issues that we have to operate on our own.
John Chesvina, can I hear from you on this?
Yes, Michelle. What unites us is far greater than what divides us. And unfortunately, the reality is the racism and discrimination still exist. And whether it is at the higher ends of the economic spectrum, we have driving while black, driving while brown, irrespective of someone's economic status. So we have a lot of issues in common where we work together. And I think at the grassroots level, of course, there are issues dealing with competition and perceived competition, and we have to be realistic, and we have to do a greater job of speaking with local grassroots leaders about what the realities are in terms of economics, that we're not looking for competition for the lowest level jobs, as has been suggested in immigration, but really uniting on job training, on education issues, so that both of our communities are elevated.
All right. Thank you both so much, and hope we'll speak again.
Sure. Thanks so
Thank
much.
Thank you very much.
John Chesvina is president of the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Educational Fund. He joined us from member station WBEZ in Chicago, Illinois. We're also joined by Mark Morial. He is president and CEO of the National Urban League. He joined us from his office in New York. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.